on their bills to expect a rate increase.
Good evening, everybody. We have to say is that we had to recess the meeting at 5 o'clock, and we had one item to take care of before we move on. We had inadvertently noticed the public hearing at 6 o'clock, so we're doing that now. If anybody would like to speak to, I'm opening the meeting.
This is the Marine Commission.
This is a Marine Commission meeting. And it's item number 6 under new business. It's considered adoption of resolution number 140909 of the Town of Lake Lure Marine Commission amending the Lake Use Regulations section, whatever, pertaining to the non-resident boat permits on undeveloped properties. It's a pretty simple thing. It was an issue that had to do with some clarification of some verbiage. Would anybody like to speak on that? Hearing none, we move on to the item and consider the adoption. We've already discussed it. Would anybody like to make a motion?
I'll make a motion that we adopt the resolution.
Okay, motion made by John. Do I hear a second?
Seconded.
Second by Mary Ann. Any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
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 It's unanimous. With that, could I have a motion to adjourn Marine Commission?
I'll make that motion.
Motion made by Bob.
Seconded.
Second by Mary Ann. All in favor say aye.
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 Okay.
Aye.
Now we'll get on. Now we'll get on with it. Get rid of these. We have, could you all rise, please, for an invocation and pledge of allegiance?
Let us pray. God, we thank you for this past summer and cool weather, along with the blessings of those visitors who have come here. We also ask for your blessings on this coming fall season and give you thanks for the beauty and colors that surround us. Grant us your grace, Lord God, as this council makes decisions that affect those who live, work, and visit in this town. We especially pray for safety, peace, health, and blessings on this community. We ask all these things in your name. Amen.
Amen.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you all. Item number 4, approving the agenda, and let me make the comment before we start that item number 11 again was noticed in the paper for 7 o'clock, so we can't do that one until 7 o'clock. So with that as a postscript or a prescript, do I hear a motion to approve the agenda as is?
Motion to approve the agenda as is.
Okay, motion made by Diane. Do I hear a second?
I'll second it.
Second by Bob. All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
That's unanimous. Okay, we'll move into public forum. We have our favorite politician here tonight. Nadine Hodge, why don't you come up and say hello to these folks. Tell them what you're running for and what you hope to do.
Yeah. You're on the internet, too.
Oh, wonderful. Thank you, Mayor Keith. So I appreciate the opportunity to be here. And as he said, I am a politician. As of February, I really am not a politician, but I am your Democratic candidate for clerk of court for Rutherford County. And the reason I'm here is because Lake Lure is as much a part of Rutherford County as the town of Rutherford is. And I want you to know that I am here because as your clerk of court, I will be there for the people of Lake Lure, just as I will be for the people of Rutherford. And I live actually 45 minutes from here in a little community called Shiloh. People from Shiloh will be represented as your clerk of court. I will be representing you just like I'm with those people. The reason I'm running, I have a lifelong service work history. When I graduated from high school, I began working and serving the people of Rutherford County. I work in the school system as a teacher assistant, and then I taught computer education to elementary students. And then when Shiloh Elementary was closing, I chose to go to the clerk's office to work after having served as a juror for 10 days. I really became interested in the court system, and Mr. Melton had an opening. I was able to work there for over 8.5 years as a clerk for Mr. Melton. I served not only in district court, but in superior court. I was an assistant clerk. I've worked in all areas of the clerk's office. That's how I really became acquainted with Mr. Callahan during doing domestic court. My reason for running is to bring fairness to the clerk's office. I feel like all people should be treated fairly, and the law should be the utmost importance to the people of the court system. The clerk's office, most people don't realize, the main reason the clerk is there is to handle the paperwork. It's a kind of a circle. It takes care of all the paperwork coming in and going out of the court system for agencies, for individuals, and for the sheriff's department. My reason for running is I've worked there 8.5 years, and I saw that not always are those needs met. They need to be met in a friendly and courteous manner with professionalism, and that's what I would like to bring to the clerk's office. I want to be there to serve you. As I said, I'm on the Democratic ticket. I have conservative values. I have conservative Christian values, conservative family values, and conservative fiscal values. I've tried to keep my spending to a minimum in my campaign, and I will do that as I represent you as your clerk of court. I would like for you to remember, well, early voting begins October 23rd, but I would like for you to remember Aiden Bradley Hodge for your next clerk of court. And again, Mayor Keith and Town Council, thank you for allowing me to be here.
Pleasure.
Thank you.
If anyone has any questions, I'll be happy.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We'll let you out of the hot seat tonight.
And that's your husband.
This is my husband, Don Collins.
And we have a close relationship because her son works in our financial department.
That's great.
And I have a second person who would like to speak, Pat Cook.
I just came here, I want to say, on an issue that I brought up last time here, I want to thank Chris, all the town members, for responding to my concerns about our water bill. And also the EMS, I did get a response from Ron Morgan, and I just want to say thank you for being so nice to address this problem. I still want to say, please sharpen your pencils and get that water bill down, because there are a lot of people that live close here that cannot add any more money to their finances. And I also want to thank you for your work that you're doing on the motorcycle noise. Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you, Pat. Would anybody else like to speak who didn't sign up?
Yeah.
Okay, come on up.
Yes,
you do. You're on. You'll be on. You're on camera. Just your name and address.
Bruce Stanley. I live in Leicester, North Carolina. Is that all you need on my?
I thought it was
Leicester. Wait, Leicester. Reason why I'm here. I got pulled over by one of your deputies. He's a good, no problem there. I was just, and they said they had an ordinance that no log trucks can come back through here. And I understand. I understand where you're coming from. But I also didn't understand then, and I reckon it's an ordinance. It might have been the chief of police said it's been in for years. He's an awful good guy. Well, I talked to him about it. He said I should come and talk to you. The DMV said I should come talk to you guys. I said maybe you guys can help me out. What it was, I'm not within 5 miles from your from Lake Lear, you know, and where I'm having the truck and go, it's 2 hours I'm away from, you know, if I could come through here. And I've got a good driving record. I've always been safe, and, you know, I try to abide by your junk brake rules, and I'm not out to hurt nobody. I'm just trying to, the other way is just a killer, simple as that. It's just, you know, if you do a danger zone from where I'm going to where I'm coming down through here, I'd say, being high danger, it's 10 to 3 down through here. You know, it's lots. I know you wouldn't think so, all these little crooked roads, but it's a lot safer. This is level. Everywhere I'm going is downhill. And I just come to see if there's anything I could do to come through the town. Or I know what the chief says. He says if I do it for one, I got to do it for all. And I understand that. But it's not like I'm in Black Mountain or, you know, if I'm close to 26 or close to 40, I would understand that. But I'm right beside of you guys, you know, within 5 or 6 miles. And I just come to see if I can do anything, or I'm going to keep going that way.
What route are you having to take now?
Well, I'm going to come back to Old Fort and come back around. I'm going to Gilkey. Yeah, I know you and Troy Young's related to Gilkey and Umber County. I'm going to come back to Old Fort, going to come make the big circle. And if you add it all up in a day, it's about 3.5 hours or maybe longer than if I went this way. And it's hard on tires. I mean, I busted 4 tires in 5 days, so, you know, and it's real dangerous. I mean, and I'm a safe driver, and, you know, I wouldn't mind just take a ride with me any day. I'll show you it's real dangerous where I'm going, but I'll continue on if I have to. But I thought I needed to come to plead my case anyway. And, well, and like I say, if I was in 5 miles of Black Mountain or 5 miles of Hendersonville or 10, you know, I'd understand. And but my problem was I'm right beside you guys. I'm right beside of us, you know. Mm-hmm. And
why don't we take why don't we get the chief and town manager to set up a meeting with you and see if there's a solution that would work for us, maybe loggers that are close by but wouldn't open the floodgates for everybody to come through.
That's what the DMV is talking about. You know, I went and talked to him, and he said he understood my point and should come to you guys. You know, mm-hmm. I'm not asking to be, I guess what you say, be put above nobody else, but, you know, those guys way off, they need to go somewhere else. I agree with you. If you're in Black Mountain or if you're in Hendersonville, you can turn your wheel and go some other way. You know, but when you're right here, and I did all my calculations when I did this job, you know, and put it all in calculations, it's not working out now. You know, it's just not going to work out. It just can't.
There may be a solution. I think that would be a good starting point if the three of you all get together. And I hadn't thought of this before now. I wasn't aware of it, but there may be a way to do a special permit for someone within a certain radius. I don't know what it would be, but if the three of you put your heads together, I bet, you know, we can come up with something, or maybe not, but at least we would have looked at it.
Yeah.
I would be curious what the DMV told you, because it was my understanding many years ago when this was dedicated as a scenic highway and the name was changed to Memorial Highway, that sort of like the Blue Ridge Parkway, but not quite that extreme, commercial vehicles were no longer allowed to come across the mountain. We used to have 18-wheelers come through picking up gap. And that only those that were picking up or making a delivery within
that
area.
Part of town.
Right. Yeah. So that's what.
Well, the DMV really, here's what they told me. That he printed me out the town ordinance, and it's got an ordinance, the number, GS something or another. I've had got it, but I haven't got it with him. He printed out that to me. He said that you guys could do this, but he said since I was this closed, he don't see why we couldn't come up with a solution to that I might come through here. That's about what he told me. He said he would have to enforce that. You know, I'm just trying to...
Right.
You know, I understand.
I agree. And I think we can look at it.
But he just, he thought, well, you know, it'd be awful neighborly if somebody's right beside of you to, if I wasn't at this distance, I can understand his point of view. You just don't need no trucks through here. And it is, you got to go slow and take your time, watch pedestrians. I understand that. But, you know, he's the same point that you guys are. He's just that he understands my side, too. He said, I need to come and talk to you guys, and that's why I'm here. And I don't want to force the issue. I don't run through this town. And, you know, I've been down through here a time or two, and I see log trucks. And I'm going to bring their names up, and I see log trucks running up down the road through here. But I'm not one to break the law. You know, like he said, we get our heads together, make a decision. If it's no, I'll keep it going that way. But on DMV's part, he's does his job. You know, that's what he's going to do.
There's several ways you can get to 74, but you still have to come through town unless you go to Hendersonville.
You got to go to Hendersonville. You got to go to Black Mountain or Old Ford.
Thank you for coming and letting us know.
Make sure you put your name and number over to Chris.
Okay.
That way, just get back in, please, Chris.
He's a town manager. He'll be.
Just put your number here. Okay. I'll give you a call. We'll be in touch. We'll talk about it.
Okay.
Are there any other loggers that would want to do this?
No.
Come on forward so everybody can hear you.
Okay.
Chief Humphreys and I just got done looking at this exact situation. There's two different general statutes. General Statute 20-116 is the one that actually lists U.S. 6474A and Memorial Highway as anything over 13,000 pounds is not allowed. But the one that this gentleman brought forward was General Statute 20-118 that says you cannot regulate the weight of a vehicle on a U.S. route. So basically the question is, like Mary Ann brought up, when they changed it to Memorial Highway as opposed to 6474A in the town limits, that's kind of where the question is as the law goes. It's not a city ordinance or a county ordinance or anything like that. It's a state and federal level. There's actually state and federal laws. North Carolina DOT's ordinance is the one that actually is the regulations here. So I know Chief is doing the research. Is going to contact them to try to find out more, but like he said there, just wanted to try to clarify that up, like she said earlier.
Were you the officer who stopped him?
No, sir, I was not. Well, I was not.
I think what I hear you saying is that because it's a state statute, that they're not talking about an ordinance in the town. Okay.
It's a DOT ordinance
that
is the 13,001 pound, anything there and above. It's a DOT ordinance, not a city ordinance.
That's why I wondered why DOT told him to come talk to us.
Yeah, that was kind of where my head was kind of spinning on that one, too. I wasn't sure with it being regulated by them, it kind of falls back on they're the ones that has to waive it. It's not but hopefully they can get some clarification from them and all that there. So, thank you.
Very good. Thank you. Okay, next item, number six, staff reports. Chris? I'm sorry? Yes, Pat? Okay.
Patricia Maringer, 1491 Memorial Highway. Pat Cook and I were talking about the new rate increases on the water bill. So I took a look at some of the things that we're doing on the BOA. And one of the things that the town is losing out on, we have over 246 rental houses that are permitted. We give them a commercial permit and require them to do a commercial boat permit, but we don't require them to have commercial water and sewer. The town is losing over $30,000 a year if only half of them were on the water and sewer. Just a food for thought.
Very good. Mm-hmm. We can take a peek at that.
Okay.
Very good. Thank you, Patricia. Anybody else? I didn't mean to cut anybody else out. Okay, moving on to the staff reports. Chris?
All right. Quick roundup. I don't know if anybody's hearing. Is anybody hearing it? Okay, I'll speak up as well. On the golf course, we are 400 rounds ahead of last year, which is very good. It was rainy last year. We have a goal of a total of 5,000 rounds for this season. Dale and crew have installed two new footbridges across the creek at number 7, and they'll be working on a cart bridge across that creek. Police and fire had a busy month of August on planned activities. We had four festivals in town. It started with Cycle North Carolina, then the Olympiad and Dirty Dancing Festival were on the same weekend, and then we had an inaugural water ski and skeet shooting festival. So we had good support from our public safety in all those festivals. No incidents really to report out of there. Everybody had a great time. It was great for the economy, and everybody stayed safe. The fire department did have some interesting responses outside of those festivals. In the month of August, they had two motorcycle accidents they responded to, a sinking boat, two missing kayakers in a storm that were ultimately found, and a jackknife truck on Boyce Camp Road. The Lake Operations Department, working in cooperation with a couple of the major commercial boating businesses on the lake, held a training class and a workshop and a discussion forum for all of the commercial boat drivers, all of the tour boat drivers, Lake Lure Tours, tour boat drivers from Roman Ball Resort, and ski boat drivers from the Lake Lure Adventure Company. Got all the drivers together in a room to talk about the experiences that they have on the lake every day with commercial as well as non-commercial activities. We reviewed some of the rules, regulations, and expectations because we hold the commercial boat drivers to a higher standard. And then we got a lot of really good feedback from the drivers of things that would make their lives and the experiences of their customers better and safer. So we anticipate having that be an annual discussion. And the bacteria numbers at the beach that we've been concerned about and watching really improved in August. And there's a lot of conditions that can lead to that. But one of them we certainly hope is the addition of the bubbling aerators and that system that has been installed out there. Clint Calhoun was invited up to Biltmore Lake, where they had also installed similar systems last year. They had problems that were more severe than ours, and they've experienced really good results from that. So far, so good. We'll continue to monitor that. The dredging project management team continues to work on their plans and their preparations for winter dredging activities in the River Channel, the Marina, and up at Rumbling Ball Resort, and possibly in Gray Logs Cove. So lots of proposals coming in, lots of contracts being finalized in anticipation of the lake being dropped starting December 1 and staying down for a 90-day period. Quick note to spread the word to anybody on the lakefront. If any lakefront owner wishes to perform repair work or installation work on their seawall, and they want to be part of the overall town-wide permit where there's no fee, they really need to get their application in to Clint no later than September 15th. That's coming right around the corner. After the 15th, it'll be up to the individual property owners to get their own permit, working with the state, applying and paying for some fees. And we will reach a point probably in the start of November where we'll no longer be able to get permits for anybody. So anybody that's got contracting work ready, now is the time to be getting things lined up and those plans in. An update on our major engineering and capital projects. The renovation of the dam roadway and the correction of some failures and the repaving of the steep section down to the dam is all complete at this point. The project was very successful. The water system improvements and replacement of some old galvanized lines and the rerouting of some water up in the Luremont area and the Asa Gray Drive area is complete. And our sewer ordinance overhaul is complete. We'll be talking about that a little later tonight. And what we have outstanding is some electrical work down at the dam and the hydro plant. Some new electrical connections, generator hookups, and an additional generator. That is in the bid process at this point. We've talked in prior meetings about Boyce Camp Road and an assessment of work along that road. The firm of J.M. Teague Traffic Engineering has been out, has met with our team, and done a complete end-to-end assessment of Boyce Camp Road. We're now awaiting their report, which will have pictures, cost estimates, and probably a long list of upgrades and repairs, some of which are high priority, some of which simply get that road up to state standards, which would be a prerequisite if the state were to take over maintenance responsibility. When we get that report, we'll bring it back to town council and look at what our priorities are for that work. And I think that's all for my report tonight.
Very good. Thank you, Chris. Diane?
Yes. I'll be very brief tonight. Our Parks and Recreation Board met on September the 4th, and one of the issues that was discussed is the Buffalo Creek Park. Ed updated the board that Trail Dynamics will start in October to finish the remaining 1.5 mile trail. So that will enhance even more usage, I'm sure. And Vic Knight with Knight Strategies has submitted plans for the 1 acre lot, and we'll be seeing that approval coming from Roaming Bald. The trail was utilized by approximately 1,100 people this past month in July, and 80% of them were hikers, so getting a lot of good usage. The Town Center walkway expansion, which we will be covering a little bit tonight, there hasn't been any real advancement yet because the plans have been sent to the state, and we're waiting for the state DOT approval on that. And I believe really that's it for right now.
Very good, Di.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Okay. The Zoning and Planning Board met on August 12th, August 19th. And the main order of business was the Town Center plan that we're going to get a review on later in this meeting. So I won't bore you with going over what Shannon and Vic will be going over later. The other thing that was discussed was the discussion on the breweries that we had asked Zoning and Planning Board to review and discuss, and it was determined that it would be best to, the Zoning and Planning Board wanted to wait until the new sewer regulations were completed and in place before they turned before they made the recommendations on breweries to council. So that was tabled, and that was it, except there's one thing that I noticed that I don't believe we have on the agenda that we had talked about that we wanted to have on the agenda, and that was considering Tommy Hartzog and Kevin Cooley's request to ask the Zoning and Planning Board to review the sign ordinance. They had some modifications that seemed to make sense, but we wanted the Zoning and Planning Board to take a look at that, and as council, we would need to refer that to them. So we need to do that at some...
Why don't we vote to add that to the...
Yeah, that's a good... Okay, well, let's make that then, if it's okay with everyone, item 13, right before adjournment.
Yeah, okay.
Okay.
Okay. Very good, John. Marion?
Well, I'll start with the Lake Advisory Board because Chris already stole most of my thunder about the aerators and things going on with dredging. And just add to that that we had a request for an additional buoy that was located on a fairly straight piece of shoreline and it was between two other buoys marking the 75 feet from shore. So the board denied that request because it was not an area that projected out into the lake any further than the shoreline where the existing buoys were. The dredging, one thing that's been discussed that's sort of evolving as we're doing dredging not only in the channel out here, but planning to look at other problematic areas. The two areas where dredging has pretty much been approved to take place, in addition to the river channel and beach, which the town will be taking the majority of responsibility for, Rumbling Ball Resort and Gray Logs Cove are areas in great need. And the people there are already taking responsibility for coming up with the plan of how they will be able to access that and what the procedures will be and so forth, and presenting that to the town, and the town will help with the cost. So folks are working in the Gray Logs to get folks in that area that are affected by the filtration there to come up with a plan, and that will be forthcoming. There was some discussion about commercial operations on the lake and the sharing of profits. Everybody's looking for ways to pay for dredging. So if you're interested in any of this, come to the meetings. They're all open meetings. I attended the school board meeting, and school began the day that we met on August 21st. Scarlett reported on events being planned in advertising to continue trying to build our school population. And the update on the education fund, they're coming up with ideas to work on meeting outstanding needs and opportunities for funding the Raise the Roof campaign. The there were a little over 350 students on the first day or two. I don't know what the 10-day average was that our funding or the school's funding from the state is based on, but we will be meeting, or they will be meeting, on Thursday of this week. So they're waiting for the final approval to break ground, hopefully within the next month. And because it's taken so long to get started, it's really going to push to get all the classrooms ready first so that school can open next August. And then if they will continue with construction until the gymnasium is complete. But the first push will be to make sure those classrooms get ready. The ABC store was doing real well. We will be meeting a week later this month because we will be going over the audit. But sales were up, and one of the things they're going to do to cut costs, they felt like they've been paying somebody to come in and clean the ABC store, and they felt like that the employees could do that themselves on a rotating basis. So they're cutting costs and going to be salespeople and janitors and do it all themselves. So I know you all appreciate everything anybody does to save some money. One other meeting I was asked to attend was last night on the planning for the number 9 corridor. And I was a little disappointed on the number of people who were there. These are open meetings. And we began last night with some planning and sort of pipe dreaming in terms of what are some of the things that you'd like to see 10, 15 years from now on the number 9 corridor. And since some of the folks who are leading that are here, I'm going to let them tell you anything they want to tell you about where that is at this point.
Well, we're working hard to drum up business, Commissioner Sylvie.
Okay.
We were out, went to the Dollar General store, met with a manager, pulled him out of the bathroom today. Swung by and spoke with the manager there at Ingles. So the mayor and I are going to go by next week and have a conversation with him. But we're trying to pull in the stakeholders in the NC9 corridor to pull their ideas together to kind of lay the groundwork, teasing out their values and being able to hand those over to Vic and his team for the design is where we're headed. So looking forward to the next meeting. I did hand out quite a few surveys that you were tortured with yesterday evening to some folks, so we should be getting those back as well. So we're moving in the right direction. We just need to work a little harder to get folks there.
One encouraging thing is the representative from Polk County was there because we have some opportunities with them, and there's a little bit of lack of trust right now, and there shouldn't be. And I think you dispelled that, and I think that'll go a long way as we share share some of the values through that corridor. And thank you.
Sure. That was their planning director.
Yeah, their planning director.
And there are strong commitments from the county, Rutherford County, to attend. I think they just were busy. And but the others have received invitations. The school, Leclerc Classical Academy, Mayhack, they are having an extremely busy month this month for the grand opening or for their soft opening. And I think the manager there, Ingles, told us he had a personal issue last night that he had resolved and couldn't make it. So just seemed like the stars didn't line up. But I anticipate they'll be there in 2 weeks.
Very good. Okay, Bob.
We just had two cases on the August Board of Adjustment. Both those cases were for vacation rentals. Both met the conditions and were approved. That's all we had.
Very good. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Okay, moving on to item number 8, the consent agenda. I looked over the minutes. They look pretty thorough. And the other item is to fill Jack Buckingham's position with on the asset management team with his wife, Pamela. Could I have a motion to approve the agenda?
I'll make that motion.
Motion made by Bob. Do I hear a second?
Second it.
Second by Mary Ann. Any further discussion? If not, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. It's unanimous. To my knowledge, there's no unfinished business. So let's move on to item number 10A. Consider approval of the town fee schedule for fiscal year 2014-15. Chris, are you going to speak to that?
Yes, I am. So what you have is the full schedule of all of the different town fees, permit fees, general fees, fire, land use, lake use, boating permits, and utilities, water and sewer. We always pass the whole fee schedule all at once a year. But what you have in front of you is a proposal for the only changes recommended are to the water and sewer rates. As you know, the council is coming off of a workshop last week where we looked very closely, principally at water rates, but a little bit at sewer rates. And so for the benefit of everybody else, I just kind of summarized that discussion at the workshop. Water and sewer each have to be operated as if they were standalone businesses. Municipalities really can't be in the business of giving away water or sewer services or subsidizing that from revenues elsewhere, from general taxpayers or anything else. The idea is a municipality should be providing water services, and the cost of those services should be borne by the customers that are receiving those services, that are getting water or getting sewer. Not everyone in town is able to connect to sewer. Not everyone in town is able to connect to city water. There are only certain areas of the community where we have extended and have that infrastructure available. The reality of our system, well, water and sewer both have their challenges, but in water, we just have a very costly system for a small number of customers. Water systems get pretty efficient and pretty cost effective the bigger you get. And so as you start to get to be communities the size of Forest City, Hendersonville, Asheville, Charlotte, water can be very good business. It can be lucrative business. You can provide very low cost water to your communities and have enough money to be able to continue to invest in those systems and keep them current. When you've got, you know, 500 to 600 customers total on a water system, that's a small group of people to bear the cost of all of the water infrastructure. Multiple wells, multiple holding tanks around town, multiple pumps, miles of piping, the cost of labor to go and maintain that system every day, the cost of chemicals to put into the system to purify it, the cost of environmental testing that's required on a daily, weekly, monthly, quarterly, and annual basis. You add all that up, and in our system, it costs us between $250,000 to $280,000 a year to be in the water business. And the reason I say that as a range is there's about four things that you really need to be paying for if you're running that system and running it so it'll be here 10 years from now, 50 years from now, and you don't run yourself bankrupt. First thing you have to pay for is your operating costs. The people to maintain the system, the spare parts, the gas that's required to get around, the electricity that's required to run the pumps. So after you've covered your operating costs, you then need to pay off the debt. And usually these systems have some debt. We incur debt to extend the water system out to Island Creek Road to build the water tower out there so that we could have an Ingles. Fantastic investment. We have to pay it off over 20 years. So the second thing that you have to pay for is your debt. Then after that, you should be paying for any capital improvements that are necessary, any major refurbishments, replacements, overhauls, or upgrades. Lastly, if you're responsible, you should be setting some money aside for that rainy day and those big capital improvements that are going to be needed next year or 5 years from now. Our capital reserve in the water and sewer department is down to around $100,000. Which means one major failure in the sewer department or the water department will eat up that reserve quickly. So we have been in a process the last couple of years of draining that reserve to meet our bills instead of putting money back to it. So if you cover all of those things, if you cover the cost of the system, the debt service, the capital improvements we know we need today, and then some reserve set aside for the future, you're in the $250,000 to $280,000 a year neighborhood. Our revenues from the system, based on the fees that we charge, are falling short about $30,000 to $50,000. So the real hard challenge that the town council has is to figure out, well, we're running a business here, and we're not bringing in enough revenue. So how do you fix the revenue side? Well, ideally, we get more customers, and we sell more water. Well, that's difficult in a community of our size. Anybody that should be connected to water or wants to be connected to water is at this point. And so to get more customers, you'd have to spend more money to lay more line to pick up one or two or three customers. It's just not cost effective. So we are what we are in terms of water customers. They're consuming about the amount of water that they're going to consume. The only other lever that you have is the rates that you charge for providing that service. And to make up $30,000 to $50,000, you've got to get an additional amount, and those rates have to go up. The council looked at a lot of different options, where not every water customer is treated exactly the same in terms of cost. Residential is charged one set of rates. Commercial businesses are charged a different set. Users that use a small amount of water versus large amounts of water have a varying rate. Everybody starts with a base rate, and then there are per gallon rates on top of that. So we looked at a lot of different options of shifting that burden, maybe away from residential, more toward businesses. Well, that tends to stifle economic growth and the creation of businesses. You shift it back to residential, and you have a hard time if you've got a lot of customers who are on fixed incomes or retired or not able to bear more costs. So either way you slice it, there's not an easy or an enjoyable solution for everybody. But at the end of the day, we're back to municipalities have a responsibility of providing water. We have infrastructure that we've inherited over 80 to 90 years, and we have to pay for it. Our departments have worked really diligently to squeeze all the costs that we can out of this. We're operating the system with fewer staff. We're trying to make the most and minimize the amount of fuel and travel that we do. We are at every turn trying to economize while maintaining the quality and purity and safety of the water. There's not much more we can squeeze out on the cost side. So that brings us back to rates. What we discussed in the workshop was we need about 30% more revenue, which if you treat everybody equally across the board is about a 30% rate increase. That's not feasible all at once in 1 year. The consensus of the council seems to be, let's ease into that over maybe a 3-year period, see how we're doing, see if we can find ways to maybe avoid that full 30% over 3 years. And what we've proposed here for discussion and comment is a 10% increase this year to start to reduce the loss that we will have in that operating. We won't have enough to set aside for future capital reserves. We will still be exposed and have some risk there, but at least this is a move in the right direction. It doesn't answer the challenge of, you know, what if somebody, you know, can't handle that 10% rate increase this year, much less what's going to need to be done in the next couple of years. That's a difficult question for us as a community, as our social support systems, our churches, our outreach. So I'll leave it there for discussion. What you have is an across-the-board 10%, so we're keeping the rate structure that we have and the balance between residential and commercial. The question that was brought up earlier about treating a home that is in the vacation rental program as a commercial rate rather than a residential rate, that wasn't one of the scenarios that we looked at and calculated, but is a question on the table.
Did you want to say anything about what the state will do if we don't enact some kind of?
Yes. So everything that the municipality does in the realm of finance is subject to oversight by the state treasurer's office. The local government commission is a group within the treasurer's office that works with all the local governments to make sure that we're balancing our budgets, to make sure that we're adhering to our budgets, to make sure that towns are fiscally responsible. Part of that oversight is to make sure that, as an example, the debt that you intend to take out is appropriate and that you can service your debt. They also look at rates that are set and business enterprises like water and sewer that are supposed to break even and supposed to bring in enough revenue to cover their costs. when the local government commission sees that you're not breaking even, and that each year you're making up the loss either by pulling from your savings or pulling from other sources of revenue, first they give you a warning letter, then they give you a more sternly written warning letter, and ultimately you don't want to get to the point where they exert the authority that they have to come into a community and to either force you to adopt a rate schedule that will make you solvent, and at that point town council no longer has the freedom or flexibility to set rates, or worse yet, they can take over a town's finances or utility business. We're a long way from that. We're in very good standing with the local government commission, but we have gotten the initial first letters that say, you're operating at a loss. You need to do something with your rates or your business operation to fix that.
Thank you. That was one guiding impetus, too, to us determining what we needed to do. We don't want to raise any rates. None of us do. I mean, we'll all be paying it. I wouldn't be paying because I'm a rumbling ball, so I have a different service. That's why 70% of the people, I think, that live here aren't connected to city water, and that's another issue. We don't want the state to have to come in and force us and say, you're going to set this rate, and this is what everybody will pay. In order to meet the need, too, as Chris has been stating, we have to raise rates. We don't want to, we have to. And I know Pat and Patricia, I know you both, and everybody else is on city water. You don't want to hear that. And
our mantra in the meeting was to treat everybody the same.
Yeah.
Is it worth taking a look at the vacation rental?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't want to start controversy, but they are somewhat of a different class, and maybe there's something that could be derived from that.
Yeah.
What's your thought on that?
I think at this meeting we ought to agree on a percentage, which I'm in favor of 10% as a test, and then let's do kind of a review group or get together on discussing the vacation side. But I think it'd be too lengthy and too controversial just to do it at this meeting.
I think we spent quite a bit of time looking at a number of scenarios the other day. None of them we really liked. And trying to decide what do we want to encourage by not raising rates to create hardship. And because we don't want to increase rates, I think that's why we finally took the chicken way out and said, let's do 10%, and that gives us some time to think about it and look at other options. I told council at that time that I would look into, because Commissioner Moore had raised the point that there were people on fixed income and low incomes that have trouble making ends meet. And I'm on a fixed income. I don't get my nails done anymore. There are things I can do without, but I am on town water, and I'll have to pay the water and the sewer, whatever it may be. I've done without things before. But I went a step further. I know that my church has funds to help people in situations of hardship, but I went and spoke with Hope at the outreach program a couple of days ago, and while they don't routinely pay utilities in emergency situations, they can. And as I said, I think probably other churches have funds to help folks out in the community. Bob Keith mentioned that the Olympiad will be contributing to some of these, including the outreach programs, and that perhaps some of those funds can be directed to help people who are experiencing hardship. So it's not that we're heartless. We're trying to find solutions, and we'll continue to try to find solutions over the next couple of years, because we're still not going to be solvent.
So if I hear the, if I read the leaves correctly, it's to leave things the way they are and to look at this at a later point in time at the vacation rentals. Does that sound? So with that, and is there a motion regarding?
John, did you have any comment you want to make before we go to
No,
motion?
I think it's been covered.
Okay. Yeah. I'll make the motion that we go with the 10% and roll with the 38 recommended. 10%.
Do I hear a second?
I second it.
Second by, motion made by Bob, second by Mary Ann. Any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Now that took care of water rates. We had to approve all the rates, right?
Yeah, just all the rates in one
sweep. So could I have a motion?
That's what we did.
Oh, I thought we were doing
that. Okay, I thought you said the 10%. That's why I.
Well, that was the only change, I think.
Right. Yeah, okay. With that change, we'll accept that. Andy, fix that. Okay. Going back to item number 10B. Consider adoption of resolution number 14-9-9, adopting the Lake Lordtown Center Small Area Plan.
In your packet, you had a memo from the planning board chair, as well as the slides we're going to quickly present tonight. We provided those to you so you could study those, and we'll try not to take up a lot of your time with the presentation tonight. But I'm going to go ahead and try to set the stage for Vic with night strategies and let him present to you. This is a plan that was recommended from the comprehensive plan that was we started working on in 2006 and finally adopted in 2007. And there were a number of processes we had to go through in order to get really to where we are today. What really kicked this off, in addition to the comp plan, was the Chimney Rock State Park, basically studying the existing ingress and egress and deciding that that wasn't going to be sufficient to really provide ample access to that park as it expands into the future. There was also need for utilities. Based on that, we started the process for developing the Town Center Master Plan, which was phase one, because in addition to Chimney Rock State Park, NCDOT was coming in to do their study. We wanted to make sure that we understood the park's needs, the engineering analysis that was going to be provided, and also tease out the values of the community so that DOT and the state park weren't driving the whole development process, so that we kind of seize control of our own destiny as we start to develop, especially commercial areas. So we went through a number of phases. The transportation plan was completed. State Park Master Plan was completed and adopted. We did our phase one assessment, pulling values from stakeholders that you appointed. And so last, it was time to button all that up, and so we've done that now. In addition to just that piece, which was really focusing on a Main Street Master Plan, was paying attention to the gateway coming from Chimney Rock Village into Lake Lure, understanding that all this change is going to take place sometime in the future, and trying to dress that up. And we already took some action. As we know, we purchased the El Sereno property. That building was raised. That already has received numerous positive comments from the community about how much better that looks. In addition to the flowering bridge, it provides parking for that particular. So the gateway is starting to dress up, and so we've gone a step further in trying to look at monumentation coming in from Chimney Rock Village. But also a third element of the Town Center plan is years ago there was talk back in as far back as 1992 of adding perhaps another bridge and the narrowest section from Morse Park over to a piece of property that the town owns, Point of Rocks Park. So all of a sudden we've realized bridges have become a very important part of who we are, so much that we have included that in our branding as we completed that project. So the three elements that we're looking at tonight, the three main elements, are the Main Street Master Plan, the Rocky Broad Gateway Plan, and then the Pedestrian Bridge Bay Area Plan. I just want to place a caveat on the last one that I mentioned, because what was finally finished with the bridge was really something that was a pipe dream, pie in the sky, I think, as Marion used the term a moment ago. But it's really to force us to think beyond where we are today. And when we start to release that for proposals, I think giving those firms the ability to come back with designs, value engineering, Bob used the term earlier, is where we need to be with that, because that is an expensive bridge. And as one person said, that's the kind of bridge that belongs in Washington, D.C. But it captures the concept of what we would like to have here in the community. And I want to place a caveat on all of this. These are concepts, and they're meant to be guides. They're meant to be an expression of the community's values as we continue to develop and implement these projects. We have them frozen now in this kind of form, and we can sit down with investors, and we can express our values with these plans. Last, I just want to plug for Knight Strategies. We have worked with them. We continue to work with them. We have also secured them to help us with the NC9 plan. I think you'll see tonight why. We continue to go back with them, and it's because of the quality work that Vic and the folks that he chooses to help pull some of these designs together. So with that having been said, Vic's going to come and just kind of blow through these slides. Again, you have them in your packet. And in the end, we're going to ask you to adopt the resolution. And when you adopt that resolution, you're adopting everything that's up here with all the caveats I've already expressed. These are concepts. And the items that are in your packet and will be presented tonight. So thanks for your attention. Hope you enjoy the show.
Sean, let me just make one comment. As we were going through this in the Zoning and Planning Board, one thing that was, I hope wasn't lost on anyone, was that this is very long-term planning. This isn't anything for the immediate future. What we're trying to do is build on the foundation that was set with the comprehensive plan and look way down into the future, in reality probably beyond when any of us will be here to see it. But we want to have a tone and a flavor of development in the town that was planned and not just haphazard and a, you know, spot here and a spot there, to the extent that we can direct it in a direction that will be good for the entire town. That's what we want to do, and that takes very long-term planning. Like I said, probably beyond our lifetime, people will be looking back at what we said and hopefully not laughing one day.
Absolutely. Just to add to that, planning started in the 1920s when Chimney Rock Mountains Incorporated started this entire project, and they hired a fellow by the name of E.S. Draper to come in and do the design. He had worked for Tanner. He designed Spindale. He designed a number of other towns, and he eventually went to work, was appointed by Roosevelt to oversee a large element of the TDA. So we've pulled those old plans, and Vic has studied those. That's been exciting to delve into that history and to understand why they made the choices they made. So we've got just a snippet of some of those old plans that we've looked at, too. So, Vic.
This working?
Yeah. I'm going to use the microphone so I can move around and change the slideshow. So that's not working. So Shannon gave you a good overview of the history, the process that we've been through in developing these plans for the town center area, and what I'll do briefly, because I know a lot of you are familiar with the plans and have worked on the served on the different steering committees. Again, my role was to work with the steering committees, with Shannon, to try to capture what it was that the town wanted to see, and just to help gather that information and pull it out into a physical set of plans that we can use as that long-term guide. So what I'll do briefly is just take you through what the design process was, what some of the thoughts that went into it. Just briefly, this is from the Draper Master Plan from 26, and if you look in the on the right hand side of the screen, you'll see downtown center there, where the Lake Lorraine is in the arcade building. There's a couple of other dark rectangles that represented other buildings that ultimately did not get built as part of the plan. So one of the things that we looked at was closely was things have changed greatly since the 20s and when this plan was put together in terms of how people are getting from one point to another. You look at some of the original marketing material and there was reference to the transit systems to get you to Western North Carolina with trains and coaches and such. And so the automobile was not the primary the means of getting to there. There was still Dr. Morse, when he first came to the area, was on horseback. So the dynamics from what we're looking at today and the thinking that went into this plan have changed from a transportation standpoint. But we studied the geometries and axes, visual axes, that were created in this plan and tried to respect and understand how we could apply that to today's conditions. The other process that went in, and Shannon touched on this, is one of the things that started this whole process was Chimney Rock State Park and looking at state parks, looking at their master plan at a new means of access into the park and bringing that through Town Center for Lake Lure. And so back in 2012, I guess it was when there was an initial quick look at the Town Center area, trying to understand basically the how traffic was going to move through that space and trying to get ahead of DOT to understand how we would like to see that as a community. This is the 2012 plan. And so again, this process, and again, many of you were involved in that process, was done very quickly, and there's lots of information in this plan that carried forward into the plan that we'll look at. Lots of great merit to it, but there were lots of details that were not able to be looked at in the time frame that it was done. And so primarily that's where we went in this process is really starting to look and scrutinize this plan and the thoughts that went into it and to develop something that we thought would work well. So the with DOT's, this exhibit is from NCDOT, and their traffic engineers looked at the circulation for this area, and their proposal was to reroute Highway 74A so that it would come through the town center, and that would be the primary means of access into Chimney Rock State Park. So at the very bottom center of that slide where phase one and phase two connect is the actual proposed entrance into Chimney Rock Park. The circle that you see on the far right, or sorry, far left-hand side of the slide is in front of Town Center, Town Hall. And at the top of the screen, there's a second traffic circle that is right near where the existing bridge is, near Lestrada's. So their DOT is proposing this to happen as a public transportation project that would happen in three phases. The first phase would be the traffic circle in front of Town Hall that would connect to the new entrance to Chimney Rock State Park. The second phase would then take you from there and through the Lake Lure Town Center to the traffic circle near the existing bridge. And then the final phase, third phase, would be a route that takes you around the main street of Town Center so that as traffic continues to increase that there's a means of routing around and not congesting the main street area. So this is just a quick overview of the overall small area plan for the town center. At the bottom you see the main street area. In the upper left-hand corner, there's the gateway property that Shannon referenced, the connection in Chimney Rock Village and the town of Lake Lure, and has a different set of circumstances and different considerations. And so we had one steering committee that was focused on that area. We had a second steering committee focused on the Main Street area, and then actually a third in the spring as we were looking at the pedestrian bridge at Morris Park. So just quickly, the process that we went through with the pedestrian bridge at Morris Park, we looked at many different concepts from prefabricated bridges to this custom bridge. And as we went through the process, it ultimately led us to this design, which is very much in keeping with the design of the original bridges from Lake Lure, from the DOT bridges from the 20s, and the Flowering Bridge with the arches. It's a cast-in-place concrete bridge with balusters on the top. One interesting concept that came out of that was this end of the bridge that you're looking at is located near the pavilion at Morris Park, and it crosses across. And one of the things that we studied was just the connections of best placement of that bridge. But the point closest to the pavilion at Morris Park, it was proposed to have an additional purpose to be in the end of the bridge. The end of the bridge is elevated, so we're proposing that restrooms and changing rooms would be located underneath the end of the bridge, and also that creates a performance area overlooking the field adjacent to the pavilion. I'm going to skip through some of the details of this. So, just quickly, how we took the 2012 master plan and evolved it to this 2014 master plan is we started looking at this from a perspective of if a private investor were to come in and to develop a portion or all of the downtown area, what are the criteria they could be looking at from a commercial development standpoint? And so we started in looking at what the land could support from a yield standpoint, and a lot of that has to do with parking and the width of the travel lanes and parking along the main street, so the proportions of the roadways and things. And so, again, knowing that this is part of something that DOT ultimately will implement as part of the Main Street, we work with DOT's roadway guidelines for the development of the Main Street, and we backed into what the ultimate yield for that space would be. And you know, one of the things that that came out of the process was that residential units in this area are going to be critical to the success of this. In the top of the arcade building, I think there are 8 residential for rent units that have been put in the past 18 months, and those were rented up as fast as they were put in. So there's definitely a demand there. These types of mixed use projects are occurring all over the country now, and so there's lots of merits to the concept. And it will help support the future growth of commercial space within the town center. And the thought was, from a commercial development standpoint, that this town center would be oriented towards tourism in terms of the types of uses that would be there, restaurants and retail shops and things that would cater to tourism. As we're starting to look at the Highway 9 corridor, we're starting to talk about service type of industry or service type of businesses to support the local and regional economy. This diagram just quickly illustrates some of the critical points that there were several things that were established early in the process that were critical to the evaluating the success of this plan, and one of those was highlighting and accentuating the historic architecture that exists there today. So namely the Lake Lure Inn as being the landmark element that exists today in that area. And so the blue star near the bottom center is the location of the Lake Lure Inn. And so one of the things that we looked at was view sheds, and as you're approaching the town center area, making sure that we respect that and keep that view to the Lake Lorraine. So as you come around by what is currently the ABC store, that's your first view into downtown Lake Lure, is that glimpse of the Lake Lorraine. The large blue arrow with a point on each end is highlighting the physical connection between the town center and the beach, the lake and the beach. One of the things, the dynamics that's changed from the original plan from the 20s and now again, is the automobile and the significance of the number of trips that happen through there. So in the 20s, when that plan was originally envisioned, it was easy for a pedestrian to walk from that area across to the beach and to the lake unimpeded by traffic. Today, we know that's a different circumstance. And so one of the things that we proposed is that road would be taken out that crosses between the front of the arcade building and the beach, and that vehicular circulation would route around, and there would be a large pedestrian civic space that would occur right in the center there, and that could be used for special events and when there's arts and crafts festivals and things, also for performing arts. There's an amphitheater proposed on Pool Creek that would support those type of performing arts events as well. These are just a couple of typical cross sections, looking at the streetscape, just trying to understand scale and proportion. And so the next piece is the gateway area. So you see the Flowering Bridge and the DOT bridge across the Rocky Broad River there. And so the primary area of study was from the traffic circle that's proposed in front of Town Hall to just beyond the intersection of Boys Camp Road, and then looking specifically at the property at the intersection where the old El Sereno restaurant was located, and the old camp, all the way up to the old campground property. So again, trying to understand that property in terms of highest and best use and understanding what the potential was there. Some of the constraints that existed with that property had to do with floodway and floodplain that exists there. Some of the merits that property has is that there's sewer and water that exists on the property today. It's in a location from a commercial development standpoint that has lots of potential in the future as things start to grow and build out. One of the significant things related to that particular piece of property is the intersection with Boys Camp Road, leading to a significant area with Chimney Rock State Park and the climbing and bouldering area. And so one of the scenarios that we looked at and what's represented in this plan is a tent camping area that would be associated with some of the commercial development, potentially a restaurant or microbrew that could be located there as a destination type of venue, also potentially an outfitters with technical gear and things that could be used by, again, the local business. We've already seen with the Buffalo Creek project that, you know, we're beginning to draw more of that technical outdoor adventure crowd to the area by providing the resource for them in a mountain bike trail. The climbers have been coming here for a long time. The climbing is spectacular with folks who are in that group. And again, one of the things that's been a limited resource here has been some type of camping venue for that group, and that group will just continue to grow. So we're proposing in this, it would be single story, more of a residential kind of look and feel to the commercial buildings that happen in that area. We're respecting the floodplain by doing low impact type of development with camping, parking, and then keeping the commercial on the higher ground area.
Chris and Diane, this section right here, Chris and I spoke briefly about access to the village along the river, and then also
We met with the Flowering Bridge to make sure that the alignment of the walkway moving from the bridge towards Chimney Rock, really towards Boys Camp, was going to work with what they would like, and we've had discussions with DOT about that. So you mentioned that earlier. We submitted this plan to DOT, and we've gotten their feedback, and so generally the concept works with the exclusion of some of the other pathways going onto some of the other properties. But the general concept DOT is okay with, so we're moving on that. I just wanted to point that out to you, Chris.
So as you come across the Flowering Bridge, and there were members from the Flowering Bridge that were involved in this process, so we worked with them in the placement of the proposed walkway coming off of that west end of the Flowering Bridge and connecting back to Boys Camp Road. And so my understanding is the funding is there to construct that section of the greenway to Boys Camp Road. And there's a proposed kiosk and arbor that occurs along that walkway. So there's some short-term pieces of this plan that will get implemented certainly in our lifetime. One of the interesting conversations that came out of this was the Gateway monumentation. Always trying to be optimistic. So the connection between Chimney Rock Village, Chimney Rock State Park, and the town of Lake Lure, we had lots of interesting conversations about what that aesthetic is that represents the different communities and things influencing our community. And what we tried to do physically was to create a monumentation that would take you welcome into Chimney Rock Village and also welcome into the town of Lake Lure at one central point, so that you essentially cross a threshold and you're in Chimney Rock Village, you cross one and you're in the town of Lake, the same one coming the opposite direction and you're in the town of Lake Lure. And this property represents that connection. It's this centrally located property. It's also, as you start to look at the overall master plan for Chimney Rock State Park, it is also very centrally located to that. And we've had some conversations with state parks as well about, you know, the possibilities of some type of visitor center component that may work for them as part of this outdoor concessionaire type of business that could happen on this property. But what you're looking at here, this elevation represents that gateway component, and so we pulled pieces from the Mediterranean style architecture that came from Draper's original master plan for the town of Lake Lure in this Mediterranean village on a mountain lake, and then the stone walls with the arches on them came from Douglas Ellington, who was an architect in Asheville. He designed the original stone wall entrances into Chimney Rock Park, and so we pulled that element in, the Mediterranean element in. The actual sign component to these is directly from the marketing material that was developed for Chimney Rock Village and the town of Lake Lure, and so we've got that branding element that was developed, and it was an interesting process from the beginning to the end. That this probably represents. Is a great representation of all the teamwork that went into this entire process for the town center area. So it was kind of a fun process. There also you'll see between the roof element and where the curving sign is, we designed into that special event banners. As Chris mentioned, four special events just in the past month, and so there's lots of activity, and the exciting thing about it is that's where this is a very volunteer-oriented community, and so the community gets very engaged, and so we're creating with these gateway elements a place to showcase those events as soon as you come into town. We can highlight those. And I believe that's it, unless there are questions.
Any questions? If not,
can I ask a question?
Sure, Pat.
You know, well, JMT is looking at Boys Camp Road right now from a traffic engineering perspective. And, you know, again, all of these are concept plans. And, you know, we have disclaimers on all the plans, and that, you know, a lot of the work that we're working on is not town property. You know, some of this property is private property. We've had a lot of those owners as part of this process. Again, it's to try to create a vision that can help us from a community perspective to have some level of guidance or influence and hopefully the shaping the future of our community. Ultimately, it's a private sector decision, and in any of those, whether it's public or private, the traffic engineering is an important piece of that. And so specifically, if someone were to do something similar to this plan, they would look at the proposed traffic counts and uses based on standards to see how many cars would be coming in and out of a development such as that, and what type of improvements would be needed from a traffic safety and level of standpoint, so moving traffic through there efficiently and safely.
Pat, we knew this question would come up, so we left your buildings exactly the way they are and didn't really have any concepts for your side of the road.
So. I sell them to you. You can have.
Very quick on his feet, didn't he?
Yeah. Had a lot of time to think about that.
And the overriding objective for all of this work is to improve everyone's property values.
That's right. That's right. And to really try to provide opportunities that other folks may see to invest or recreate. But we're trying to tease out the community's values and then provide opportunities for folks to invest. So thank you, Victor.
Thank you. Thank you for all the hard work.
Can't say enough about Knight Strategies and the work they've done. It's been fantastic. So what we're asking you to do tonight is to adopt the resolution. In doing so, you'll adopt everything that you've seen today, and we'll use that as a guide as we age into the future.
But we're not being asked to put it in the budget.
You are not being asked to put it in the budget this year.
Now, do I have a motion to consider adopting the Lake Lure Town Center Small Area Plan?
Sure.
So moved by Diane. Do I hear a second?
I'll second it.
Second by Bob. Any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye. Okay.
It's unanimous.
I would like to just as well commend Shannon and his department.
Yes.
When we've done this kind of planning work in the town in the past, the comp plan was the last big example. Just didn't have the capacity and skills in the town staff or in the town to do it. We've had to hire big guns from big firms outside. They do great work, but it costs a lot of money. And the council knows that we've had conversations in prior budgets. And we're to the point now where we have started to develop a lot of skills in-house. We've had folks like Vic choose to live in this area and to do his design work in this area. And that affords us the ability to do some pretty awesome planning for a lot less money than we have in the past. And I think the work is even better. So this is all about making it local and really incorporating those local values. So kudos to you guys for being able to do this for what little cost we're able to afford.
We appreciate that, and the town staff, because I know the hours are involved in this, and it's tremendous. Thank you.
Excellent. Okay, moving on to the item 10C, consider adoption of resolution number 14099A, endorsing deannexation of Eagle Camp LLC property, tax pin 164-5450. What I'd like to do is that Shannon put together a nice introduction. I'd like to read about four sentences from that introduction. Would like to then read his resolution and then have Shannon come forward and give us his thoughts. Then we'd like to have Lynn and the owners of the property, Lynn and Russ, come forward and address us, and then answer any questions that we might have. And then Russ has asked to have one parting reading a few sentences of have some of his final thoughts. After that, we can deliberate the issue, okay? Just this as a structure. And this is in the packet. I mean, if you want to look at it, it's just, this is something that Shannon put together. It says, Lynn Carnes and Russ Pitts, owners of Mystic Waters Farm. That's out by Girl Scout Camp Road. I think you all know where that is. It's got a Mill Spring address. Are requesting town council to pass a resolution endorsing a bill to de-annex their property from the town of Lake Lure. The owners believe this to be a win-win scenario for the town and themselves. In their opinion, the town staff and multiple boards would no longer be responsible for regulating uses, rural in nature, not normally associated with municipal operations and services on their property. They believe their uses pose no negative impact on other citizens or neighboring property owners. The owners make the case that the town would never have to consider adjusting its regulatory provisions or programs to accommodate the rural-oriented uses if the property is de-annexed. And de-annexation requires no zoning changes, requires no variance or variance of town's regulations, and therefore they have come to town council as opposed to bring it to some other board. Now the resolution itself, I think, is also revealing because it covers all the items that we are considering. And this is the resolution endorsing de-annexation for the Eagle Camp. Whereas a town line bisects the property and has created confusion over where town rules and county rules apply. And it's as simple as if they make a 911 call, who responds? Town of Lake Lure, if it's a town issue, or the Sheriff's Department? Whereas the primary uses of the land are conservation and agriculture, where town regulations primarily address residential and commercial use. And whereas town regulations prevent the owners from conducting typical farm uses, they have goats and the pasture is on town property and they can't have goats on town property, so they have to cut hay down and take it over to the goats. It's just little things like this, and they're numerous. Whereas DENR classifies the non-conserved land as agricultural use. Whereas the town currently provides no water, trash pickup, or sewer services to the property. And whereas the location of the property is separated from the rest of the town, sitting on the southwest corner of the town boundary and has no impact on other citizens or adjacent property. And whereas there are no town residences either in sight or in earshot of the parcel. And whereas the entire boundary next to the town properties, Ingalls, Lake Lure, Medical Park, Mary Ann's property, is conserved for in perpetuity. Even if ownership changes, that land will never be developed. And whereas a percentage of the parcel in town limits, is in town limits, only 35 acres, or 21% of the total parcel, is not conserved. And whereas the part of the property inside town limits can only be reached via roads outside town limits. And whereas the landowners plan to expand the agricultural use of the parcel while protecting conserved land on the property. We're getting to the end. And whereas the landowners do not plan to ask the town to deliver water, sewer, trash services to the parcel. And whereas until 2011, the property paid no taxes to the town of Lake Lure due to the nonprofit use. That was the Girl Scout camp. Taxes to the Lake Lure in 2012 were just a little less than $1,000. 2013 were almost $1,100, or 8% of the total property tax bill for the parcel, which is about a 0.5% of the town's total tax base. And then they ask, now therefore it be resolved that the town council, and this is what they're asking us for, town of Lake Lure, North Carolina, endorses the de-annexation of Eagle Camp, the property PIN number such and such. And that is what Shannon has prepared based on input from the applicants. And Shannon, you would like care to comment on the issues surrounding this?
Well, I think you pretty much summed it up, Mr. Mayor. I think staff is responding to the request of the owners, and so the resolution is based on information that the owners provided to the town, and so we simply put it in the correct format. And we basically provided a memo to you that kind of lays out their arguments, and trying to be fair, that was the appropriate thing for us to do. So that's the information you have. We have had some conversation, communication back and forth, where we have tried to kind of respond to some of the issues that have been raised by the property owners, so that you kind of have a full picture and some things, excuse me, from the town perspective. I would have to say that as a staff person working for the town of Lake Lure, there is an allegiance there to the town and to the council and to the staff of the town. And so that's what I'm hired to do. And so that's where my interest is to make sure that the community as a whole, under the jurisdiction of the incorporated area of the town of Lake Lure, those interests are protected, and that we try to work to secure the interest of the community as a whole. That's not to the neglect of the individual property owner, but the emphasis from our perspective, from our department, is to make sure that the community's interest is secured and protected. So in some of the communication back and forth, I think some of the points have been made along those same lines. I would like to say that there is currently a trend. You're seeing it in large urban areas as well as small, where towns are beginning to embrace the idea of a mix of uses, that you can have different uses as long as they're appropriately implemented, where you can have agriculture taking place in urban areas. Chicago, Charlotte, you name it, the list is long. Large and small towns where they're working hard to try to allow for agricultural uses so that folks have flexibility to use their property in such a way that best serves the community. Moving vegetables straight from a small area in your jurisdiction straight to the table, whether it's a restaurant or whether it's folks in your community, is a wise thing for us to do rather than have to be overly dependent upon vegetables that are grown in another state or in another country to help basically feed your own community. So coming up with provisions, working with the property owners, be it Lynn Carnes or Russ Pitts, to try to find ways to integrate some of their ideas and uses into our regulations, whether it's amending an existing district or creating a brand new district that will allow for some flexibility, is certainly where I think the department would like to be given an opportunity to work with them to do that. And that's where we are. De-annexation, when you de-annex a piece of property, you basically, lose your jurisdiction, you lose the connection with that property, the property owners from your community, from a town being incorporated, that perspective. So I don't think you've seen the department jump up and down and embrace de-annexation. You're losing tax base, and you're also losing that important connection that facilitates community. It is the Community Development Department. So that's kind of where we are. Be glad to answer any questions you may have about the request from the department's perspective.
Shannon, is it fair to say that although you helped draft the resolution for the property owners, that it's not your position to, that doesn't mean you're necessarily recommending that we pass that tonight, if I'm understanding correctly?
That's correct.
That's correct.
That is correct.
Something of this nature, this magnitude, the effect it would have on this property and potentially other properties, that is something that at least should be reviewed by the planning board.
Yes, I think that's accurate. I think that would be something that we would like to see if we can find solutions to the issues with the planning board as a recommendation back to town council along the lines that I've just described. So,
good. Okay, we're going to keep this interactive, so don't go far away.
I'll be right here on the front.
Okay, Russ and Lynn, why don't you come on up? I don't know how you want to, and then we'll get some other.
Can we both come at once?
Sure. You can use the other microphone if you want to.
If you're both on the same side.
No, we're on the same side. Y'all might have seen us argue at the camp occasionally over where we're putting this road or that road, but... So what I want to do to start is I think that the biggest question you have, John, you brought it up, is what does this mean for other properties? And I think the first question you have to answer, and then I want to take you through more of the details of our logic, is what other properties are like ours so that you don't open a can of worms? Can you hand that map out?
Sure.
So what I'm handing out, what I want to show you is, Shannon, by the way, Shannon, thank you for everything that you've done. Shannon's interest was so clear that I haven't been courted. I haven't felt like I was courted that much since I was courted by that man. I'm not trying to divorce you. I still feel the love, and this isn't about losing jurisdiction or losing a connection with us, but we do want to lose jurisdiction, and I'll tell you why. The first page you have is Eagle Camp. The town-county line runs exactly through the middle of the property. There's no fence there. There's no other line of demarcation other than an electrical power line, which we thought was our town line, but it isn't, we found out. And we are moving back and forth all the time doing things with that. Now, on Shannon's list, what he sent you all in discussing about Planning and Zoning Board, which I fully support, you all need to look with Planning and Zoning at agricultural uses. However, this property, can't solve it. Here's why. No other property has anything but a sliver that's in and out of the town. So you have other big properties in the town. Most of them are 100% in the town. So Michelle Morton, 100% in the town. In fact, let me, Russ, can you pass out to this spreadsheet? Because this shows you the list that Shannon put out. There are actually only four parcels and three owners that have a sliver of a line. 95% of them are in the town with a little sliver out in the county. So it creates a whole different set of uses. So that's your first question is, can you set precedent with us? I would argue no, because nobody else has a town line bisecting right down the middle of their property. Then the second question is, what's the impact on the taxes? Guess what? Of those four properties that have these characteristics, their total tax tonight to Lake Lure in 2013, should you somehow magically lose those because of precedent, was $1,400. Now, I'm trying to figure out what I'm doing wrong because we paid $1,100 and we don't have anywhere near this acreage. So somewhere along the line, we're probably going to be finding that our tax bill goes down over the years as we increase our agricultural use, because I think that's what's going on, but I haven't been able to fully research it. So those are your first two questions. Will we set a precedent? I say no. The second question is, are we really hurting the tax base? Again, I say no, because it's $1,100 against a $2.3 million tax. So the perception may be that it's large. The reality is it's actually very small. And then the next question is, all right, well, if we de-annex them, can they go out and do crazy things to impact their neighbors? And if you look at the rest of the whereas list, that's what it says, is basically, look, Lynn and Russ are away from everybody. When we had our shooting event, nobody heard it. You couldn't even hear it from Ingalls. You could hear it from the property itself, nowhere else. Well, our neighbors up the way, we asked them about, did we bother them with the shooting? And they said, oh, well, we shoot, you shoot. We're pretty sure it's not a big deal. So they can hear us, but that's it. We're out of earshot. We're out of eyesight. We're out of any other possibility of hurting anybody. The conserve land, the important thing for you all to think about is, okay, but you do border the town. So what if somebody came in and did something that impacted the town from there? Well, you can't, because it's all conserved. So that area can never be developed. So there really isn't any way that we can hurt the town by being out of zoning. And the core reason that we want to be without the zoning, and I'm going to actually hand out another one, because this is where it gets really interesting. The reason that a zoning district won't solve our problem is two jurisdictions. So what we've put together is just a statement on why we believe that we should not actually be zoned at all. And the first one is, if you're serving two masters, you serve none. Every single time we do something, we have to go, wait a minute, is this a town issue or is this a county issue? And for those of you who were out, y'all were here in July, but we had our first example in July. John, you very aptly asked us, and you should have, you're doing a ski and skeet, that's going to involve shooting. Have you asked your neighbors about that? And guess what? That was on the county side. So as much as you were interested in protecting people, that was outside of your jurisdiction. So I know you didn't mean it, but that's an example. And then I went to the town police chief to say, can we hire a police officer for the event? And he said, sorry, you're out of the town. And I said, well, actually, we're in the town. And I'm going to have your police officer working in the town. So we had Chris Francis working out of the town in the morning and the police officer working in the town in the afternoon. Now, you see, y'all starting to see how this is getting confusing? When we built our boathouse, this is when we discovered that the town line wasn't the power line. We had been told by the Girl Scouts a couple of things, that the line was in question, but if there was one, it was with the power line. So we put our boathouse in, went to the town, said, is it in the town? No, it's not. Went to the county, is it in the town? No, it's not. Okay, follow county regulations. Later, somebody else came back and said, well, another town official, maybe it is in the town. We had to get a survey. We had to get a floodplain thing. We had to go back and pull permits after the fact. And we started realizing this might be our lives. Same thing happened when we tried to add bathrooms to an accessory structure, which theoretically you can't do in a residential area and you can't do it in a commercial. And Sheila, we spent hours trying to make it fit. And somehow we managed to get that through, but we can see that was the case. We had a burglary on the property. I called Lakeville Police, said, can y'all come investigate? No. Why? Because it's on the county side. Okay, I'll call the sheriff. It's a lot longer for the sheriff's office to get there, but that was my choice. You've already heard about our goats. We have to cut hay on one side to move it over to the goats on the other side. And these are the whacking goats that are helping eat, you know, all along the kudzu all over the place. So we're helping with the whacking program.
It's hard to train the goats where the property line is.
The goats don't know.
Yeah.
And we actually can't put fences on some of the places where the town line is.
Yeah, because the fences that are normal for use in agriculture are not permitted in the town.
Well, and so this was another issue that we had was, and I'll get to that in a minute, we can't put the kind of fences that you put on a farm inside of town regulations. Your zoning may figure that out, but again, this is really about serving two masters. We don't have trash services. We ask for recycling. We managed to get it because the Neelands live close, but that's really the only way we got recycling. And on erosion control, eventually, you know, we had Clint properly, thank you, I guess I'm taller than the microphone. We had Clint trying to, you know, help us with erosion control, and we had the state. And we were like the monkey going back and forth. The state says this, Clint says this, state says this, Clint says this. Finally, the state said, look, we're the higher authority, we're taking over, and that really worked. So that's the number one reason, is nothing you do in zoning is going to solve our two masters. The other piece of our position that we think is really important for you all to note is, for the kind of heavy-duty agriculture we're doing, we don't think that fits inside of a town anyway, and we don't think you should do it for us. We are happy to help you with the planning. I can't wait to go to some of your planning meetings, put our brain power to it, talk about how this could work, but for this parcel, for our use, for this set of facts, we don't think you should change your regulations for us, and it won't solve our problem anyway. So, and you've got some examples here going forward, the farm fencing that we want to do. I have an email from Sheila. We tried to get the farm fencing in a year and a half ago to help stop some trespassing issues we're having. It's not legal, so we just stopped. And that's kind of where we've been, is just stopped on all these other issues. We need a steel-sided barn. We're housing our equipment under little shanties. And if you all haven't seen, it's 25 pages of the zoning code to go through to get a conditional use permit. I read it about 3 pages and said, forget it, we don't need a barn. And then we have the issue with the goats, and we're going to have, who knows, it could be cattle, it could be chickens, it could be whatever. The other thing we actually noticed, and it looks like this is changing, but in the comp plan, there were 0 farm jobs in Lake Lure. There was not one goal in the comprehensive plan to address farm use in 2007. Now, I see that's changing, but we're not talking about, I don't think we have a wave of farmers behind us waiting to overtake your zoning code. And the other thing is that we just feel like that the town regulations should allow us to live in harmony with one another. We are going to continue to be taxpaying citizens. We are residents of Lake Lure. We're only asking for you to lose your jurisdiction, not our connection with us as individuals, as Russ and Lynn Pitts, who still are huge taxpayers in the town of Lake Lure, and are still very involved, and nothing about that's going to change except for this. Who's our master today? So that's what we're asking you to fix. So
we have, to Shannon's point, Shannon brought up a lot of good options, and I just want to say one thing. We embrace encourage what Shannon's saying. We agree. The farm to table is a very big initiative, and actually we're big supporters of creating, getting reducing our dependency on commercial groceries and things of that nature. I mean, it's something that our country was grown upon, and we agreed to it. However, you got to look at what we're trying to do here, and we would support that. And we actually, as Lynn said, we would certainly embrace, even with our other properties that we have in town, Lakewood. We have other residential lots and other things. We embrace that. But that's, if you look at the topography in Lake Lure, even the large, other large land, it's actually very steep. And it's very high in the topology. It really doesn't lend to traditional farming, which a lot of times is called monocrops, because you're dealing with one crop. For example, what we're doing is we're focusing on growing hay for the goats, which, by the way, supports the WAC program. And we'll get more into that later. But, you know, our camp is serving multiple purposes that are very, very important for the community. But the key point is that we do agree in theory what you're talking about. And I think that is something that this town council should consider and send to the zoning and planning board. But that has nothing to do with what we're trying to achieve here. I think the key point here, and Lynn's highlighted it very carefully, is that because of the property line being down the middle, and because we are active on both sides of the property line with farming and such. I mean, just a case in point, I have to be careful when I'm farming and I'm doing a tractor and stuff. I have what I can do on the town side versus the other. There's no line there, and I can't. You know, it really becomes problematic, and that's what we're really looking at. And also the other thing is you've got to factor in, you know, the town side of it. A large portion of it has been conserved. When we bought the property, the Girl Scout property, it was 162 acres. We put over 80 acres into a highly, what would you say, Lynn?
It's restricted
conservancy easement. And that easement, by the way we made the decision on that is a majority of it was in the town of Lake Lure. And why we did that is because over those steep edges and such, if anything, if we actually harvested timber off of it, we knew that it was the impact to the town of Lake Lure, the waters of Lake Lure, through King Creek, was going to be enormous. And we said, no, we need to protect this forever and ever, even when you and I die, because we look at ourselves as not owners of this property, but stewards of it. Because the good Lord doesn't put you on here forever and ever. So at some point it passes on. And that's what we look at, is we look at it, we're stewards of this land. And all we're trying to do is make it work as best as we can. And to me, we're not looking at doing development. We've made that very clear. Because the land that's in the town of Lake Lure is either conserved or it's farmed. And that's it.
So I guess the conclusion is we hope that you will pass tonight that resolution so that we can get a bill through the House to be de-annexed and start serving. Actually, it won't be one master. It'll still be two masters because the Carolina Mountain Land Conservancy has everything to say about what we do on the conserved land. But since we're leaving that alone, it's no big deal. But we're asking that we can just be serving one master and only have one jurisdiction, one body of governing principles to follow because it's really hard this way.
Yeah, and I think another point that's important to consider is that the decision of de-annexation is not done by the municipality. It's done by the state. Okay. Now that's a good. I didn't get to that, Lynn. Hold on a second. My wife and I, you can tell, we're both. But the key point is that we have to understand that as far as a mass slew of de-annexations, that doesn't happen like that because it has to go. It has to meet the test with the state, and the state will look at it very carefully. And they've looked at our whereas and stuff. It actually, our request went through, and it passed to the state house. It passed to the state senate. It went to the Finance Committee. Now, here's where it gets in, is they're actually looking for some kind of documentation of how does the municipality feel about it. And there was no documentation at that point. So they really need to know how is that. And so that's what we're here, is this is actually the final piece to it. And all we're doing is just making sure that you understand where we're coming from and understand that it's not about we don't like the regulations in the town of Lake Lure. That is not where we're coming from at all. What we're saying is that we've got two sets of regulations that we've got to follow, and it's becoming problematic. We've tried to work with it for a number of years, and that was one of the advice that we had from the town manager. The town manager, when we went to him in the very beginning, we said, you know, gosh, why don't you just give it a try? Why don't you work with Shannon and Sheila and the rest, and let's see how this works out. Well, we did, and we found that we ran into issues, the same issues that the state ran into. And that's pretty important for you to keep in mind.
Well, that actually brings up the point of, what, didn't we know the town line was there? We did, but we had a lot of data that said it might not be accurate. And, you know, the way the town boundaries were set in originally were kind of squishy. So, as Shannon, you exhaustively researched it. He lived a long time. Jim Proctor went down and looked at title. We looked at our title search. We looked at everything. And that would have been the simplest thing, was to be able to call that line into question and then just take it out of the property map when you did your work before. But we just didn't have enough data to make that work. So this is the only legal process we can do to move the town line. So
let's see if there's any questions. Diane, do you have any questions?
No, I just want to make comments that I have been out to their property and seen it and had discussions with both Lynn and Russ, and I agree with their desire to do with their land like they want to do. I would like to do that too myself, but I can't. But what I would like to suggest in order to be fair to everyone, is I would like to ask that the Planning and Zoning Board look at establishing an agricultural district to see if that can help you in the meantime until a decision is definitely made. Because there might be other people in our town limits that have land that would like to make a farm, not necessarily a farm, but an area to grow produce and maybe even have some animals. I don't know. But we do have other properties of large sizes around the area. So that's one thing I would like to suggest, whether that's what we do or not.
I agree that we should go into the Zoning and Planning Board and we should look at options for doing that. However, that's not going to solve our particular problem. I mean,
no district.
It, here's the thing. You basically
haven't looked at it yet. You don't know if it will or not.
Well,
no,
here's what we know.
It's
always going to be two jurisdictions. So as long as there's zoning on one side and not zoning on the other, even if it's no zoning, you all will have jurisdiction and the county will have jurisdiction, you all being the town in general, the planning and zoning. That's our problem, is who has the decision. And what we're asking is to have one decision maker for one parcel. So no amount of zoning and planning study will help us. It's not that we're not going to go along. We'll be respectful of the rules as they are, but we're just asking you to take away that one problem that we can't get past.
Put the rest of the property in the city, and then it'll all be under one jurisdiction.
You can't. It's agriculture. You can't annex it. You can't.
Well, it's an interesting point. And, you know, here's the thing. At this, and Lynn's bringing up a very valid point, and I think it's something to demonstrate that we're willing to work with you a little bit. We can add to the resolution, because here's the thing, is we've already explained to you that we don't plan to do any development. Some may believe, well, they may have this magic thing in mind that they're going to develop down the road, or maybe it crosses hands. Well, one of the things that we can do is we can add a whereas clause, and we'd be happy to do this. Where the landowners agree to voluntarily request annexation. This is important, because now with the new state legislature, if you de-annex, you cannot, there's no more of the town can go ahead and do an involuntary annexation of a property. It has to be voluntary. So what we're talking about is we can put in a whereas in here that says that we're the landowners, because we want to say Russ and Lynn, we're going to say for perpetuity, whoever it is, agrees to voluntarily request annexing of the de-annex portion of the property if the land development occurs, you know, on the de-annex property where lots are being sold. It's also understood that the voluntary annex request will include requests for the town providing sanitary services for the annexed land. Because the bottom line, if we were going to develop it, obviously we would want to tap into your town sewer and your water and all that nature, so we'd minimize the impact. So that whereas clause will now cover you if something happens. If for example, worst case scenario, it got sold and somebody else decided they wanted to take the few acres that are not conserved, because remember, the conserved can't be developed. All right? Let's say they took the portion that's farmed and they wanted to go ahead and do something with it. You now have a whereas clause, which would be in there, which could be invoked, which was that we would go ahead and do a voluntary annexation. Now the town's covered on all aspects.
Now, you've given us a ton of information, much of it that I've received just since last night, to consider, and I don't think that there's any way for me personally to absorb all of this and make a considered decision on this short of notice. I've got a question for Shannon. Shannon, if I understand correctly, the way this property became part in town and part out of town, was that it was originally two parcels. Stop me if I'm not correct. And the one part was in the city, and the same owner bought that part and a part that was outside of the city, combined them into one lot. Now you got a lot that's, or parcel that's half in, half out, mostly in, mostly out. All right, is there anything to prevent someone who owns a piece of property that's on the edge of the city limits now buying a piece of property that joins them that's outside the city limits, doing away with the property line, creating the exact same scenario that some future town council would be looking at somewhere down the road and come back and say, well, they did it for these folks in 2014, you know, I want it done for me now. Is that something that we should consider?
Is it probable? I don't know that it's probable. Is it possible? It is possible.
That's what I think we need to do, is just take a step back, take a breath, look at the possibilities. We have an excellent zoning and planning board. Let them review this and let them come back with a recommendation to town council, because I think one of the reasons this thing was turned down in the legislature was because it didn't have unanimous support. It wasn't run through the map that we did, that Shannon did, that where he researched the town limits and came up with what the town was recommending for our permanent town border. Now, if this is going to be successful at the state level, I think you're going to need the unanimous support of both zoning and planning board as well as town council.
I spoke with Mike Hager today. I asked him what he needed, and he just said he needed a majority. So he doesn't need unanimous, and he does not need zoning, because this isn't actually a zoning issue. It may be for you all around your zoning questions, but again, we're not bringing a zoning question to you. We're bringing a jurisdiction question to you.
Yeah, this is not that complicated, actually. I mean, it may seem like we've passed a lot of information out, but this is information that is clearly available and known. I mean, what it gets down to is, again, it gets down to a very simple situation. We have a lot that's split down the middle. We have two sets of regulations we've got to deal with. No matter what we do with zoning regulation, there will still be two sets of regulations. And if you mirror the code, let's say, like you said, we create a new district, which, by the way, I would never, ever, I've served in your position, John Moore, as mayor pro tem, and also sat on the Alexander Planning Board for many years and helped to put a lot of these regulations together. And let me tell you something, I would not advocate that, because that's created a district with no zoning regulation. That would not be smart. And we've actually invited an attorney that specializes in zoning planning. If you would like to hear it tonight, we'd be happy to have him come up here and explain to you why that would not be in the best interest of the town. We're not asking you to do that.
I think we can debate this thing till midnight and still not come, all of us wouldn't all have our arms around it. I think my position is, and I may be the only one up here in this position, but my position is that we need to take a measured, deliberate approach. Walk through this thing. We have a very competent staff. We have a very competent planning board. And I will make the motion that we refer this to the planning board and that they give it proper consideration and give us and give a recommendation to council.
I respect where you're coming from, but let me just state one thing. Time is of the essence for us as well. We have many items that we need to address when the weather permits. We actually, if this gets passed tonight, we actually have been given assurances it'll go through the state and it'll happen in a very quick manner. So we're actually, timing is of the essence. If you push, we certainly, again, we've been encouraging, go ahead and look at this from a town perspective where you've got all in and you've got majority. But in our unique situation, which there is no other property that fits it, we're asking you to consider tonight either a yes or no, and to our request, because it's a very straightforward request. It's not one that's going to be precedent setting. There is no other properties out there. There are many steps that you can take to prevent that from happening, that are very low probable. It's the 80-20 rule comes in.
Let me ask you a question. John, would you vote yes if you get enough data that tells you it's okay?
I'd have to look at the data. I can't say.
But do you have any place inside of you that says yes would possibly be a possibility?
Yeah.
Okay.
Let me also state, General Assembly doesn't convene until Wednesday, January 14th, is when we go back in session.
If we get a new bill, that would be what we'd have to wait for, but they can actually put this on an existing bill.
That was my question. It's my understanding it was not turned down in Raleigh. It is just in committee.
That is correct.
And I know a little bit about how things happen in Raleigh. And I also am probably more familiar with your property than anyone in this room because I border it. In fact, I was told a number of years ago when I was trying to clarify where my borders were that the town limit was my border. And learned later, I guess after you purchased the land and Shannon was researching it, that was not correct. So I was really put aback because I know that Shannon did research on all properties that had property owners who had questions about whether they were in or out. And all of this research was done prior to 6 months ago, and I'm very clear that it was in March because it was the day of my brother's funeral. And I left his graveside service and drove straight to the town council meeting that evening. And that was the evening that the town map with the proposed border was put out to view for everyone to see and discuss. And my first concern was, have all of the property owners who have a question or a concern had that concern satisfied? And the mayor actually called a brief recess so that I would have an opportunity to look at the map. I knew that the question existed and that legislation was required to fix it. And it was because you folks assured me that everyone had assured you that it would be remedied through legislation, that it was not an issue that was still in concern or question. And with that assurance, we approved that map. And, you know, I'm aware my father raised white-faced cattle on our land that was purchased from the Girl Scout before it was the Girl Scout camp. He had 110 acres under barbed wire fence, and for 35 years, I first began to come to zoning and planning as the original ordinances were being written. The first thing they did was pass ordinances that said I could not subdivide my property unless I put a two-lane paved road into it from the gravel road, which at that time was Tryon Bay Circle. Actually, it was Cane Creek Drive, but they changed the name for 911. So then, and I was in on all of the comp plans and all of the planning, as farm animals were ruled out, there were battles in this town over people having chickens because the roosters were waking up people in the morning. Some of you may remember some of that. They outlawed all farm animals, and I had horses at the time. But nobody enforces. And years later, Bill Bush got the ordinances changed to allow horses so that they could have some riding stables up Boys Camp Road. And I remember at that meeting, after they decided you could have horses, I went over to Bill and I said, "Well, now my horses are legal." He just grinned. But this is a very unique situation. I've accepted the fact that it isn't good for the town for me to raise cattle. And believe me, I'm not going to put up that fence again. It's illegal anyway. But in order to not lose my land, I had to put it in timber management. Actually, I didn't put it in. Mother had already done that before she died. When timber management began in the state of North Carolina, I believe she was in the legislature, and she put it in timber management. Now, I didn't bring them with me, but some of you will remember about 20 years ago when the tax office took me out of the management plan because I was not cutting timber. And the Forestry Service wrote a plan that said I had to clear cut it. Now, you talk about people getting upset in this town. And I can remember when some of them began to take a deep breath when it started turning green again and things started growing back. Well, you know, they've about outlawed anything I can do on my land. So I gave some to Mahag. And about the only other thing I can do with most of it is either clear cut it again in the next 5 years, because I can't just let it sit there and grow, or I can put it in a conservation easement so nobody can ever do anything with it and stop paying taxes and let the county take it and see who wants to buy it and pay the taxes. So there are some unique situations, and I feel blessed. My mother, 40 years ago, she's been dead 35, got the state to put a catch basin at the far end of the Girl Scout camp, and got the state to rule they could never drain that lake again, because all of the upland farmland was washing into Cane Creek and into Tryon Bay. Well, what Russ has done, and Lynn, at their own expense, is to create a huge, their lake acts as a complete catch basin for all of the upland, not just their land. I'm talking about all the farmland further up there, which is a lot that has no regulation. And what Russ has done, and I've seen him down at the bridge beside my house after every rain event, after they bought that property, making sure that he was catching the stuff at his lake. Now, sometimes we get some muddy water. You can't stop muddy water. But he has done construction at his dam so that when he drains his lake to clean it out, it still holds 8 feet of water, 8 feet depth. which allows anything that washes off while it's drained to be caught there. This legislation went to the House, it went through the Senate, and it's my understanding it's in the Finance Committee, and somebody opposes it and has stirred the pot in Raleigh and has put Mike Hager on the spot with egg on his face in Raleigh that he's introduced something that maybe the town didn't agree with. And it isn't for us to decide that it be de-annexed. It's our place to take a vote to allow or to give a vote of support through this document to the folks in Raleigh that Mike Hager didn't just do this on his own.
Well, the first comment I have on that is until a week ago, I didn't know anything really about it. Until Lynn and I sat down, we went out to a property. This is the first time this has ever been discussed. Mm-hmm. And I don't think in 7 days I've got taxpayer money here. And I expressed to Lynn my main concern, and I still haven't made my decision, but $1,110.02 this year is not much money, but over 10 years, that's $10,000. $11,000 in 20 years is $22,000. There may be another way, there may be a buyout clause we could possibly come up with, but I just feel like we need more discussion than 7 days on an important topic like this. It affects every person sitting in this audience out here as far as their taxes. And that's been my main issue since our conversation, and I told them that up front. The Green Landing Conservancy is wonderful. However, it continues to eat away at the tax base of our community. We have Chimney Rock Park that we just lost not too long ago, and whether the citizens here realize or not, we get zero taxes from Chimney Rock Park. We have a total 4,000 to 6,000 acres that we get no revenue from. I appreciate you putting more land in the conservancy. However, now we get no tax base for that. However, for all the conservancy property, whether you realize or not, we furnish fire, we furnish police, and we furnish rescue at no reimbursed cost whatsoever for this community. And I love Chimney Rock Park. And you can ask people on this council and ask Chris. I keep saying, where's our reimbursement or where's some help? I don't want all the money, but how about helping us protect 6,000 acres that we get no tax revenue from? And this is what's bothering me here, is this year $1,000, yes, a lot of people, $1,000 is a lot of money, but it's not 1 year, this is forever. So if it's 30 years, that's $33,000. So, and with the other land you put in conservancy, now how much tax base have we lost there?
So none. That's the point we're
in. It's going down.
Here's the thing. Well, there's a couple of things to point out. First, Mary Ann, her statements have clearly articulated how no matter what we do, if it goes to zoning plan, whatever they come up with, by the way, it can be changed. Because the sitting government, the presiding government that's sitting in front of you right now, cannot make binding agreements that future governments cannot. The future council, it can be changed. Nothing's in stone. You can talk about grandfathering, but you can also talk about them when you have transfer of ownership, and there's a lot of other complexities that go with it. The bottom line is that the only clear way to do this, the simple way, the easy way to do it, is what we're asking for you to consider tonight. It's not complicated.
I haven't hit the
financial side of it. Let's talk about that. If you look at it, we showed you where we have, it's not even 10%, it's maybe single digits compared to some of these other property owners that are paying much less taxes than we are. We're going down that direction. We're moving towards PUV, which is present use value. The cost, what you've got by now has not even factored in our agricultural use, nor is it factored in conserving land. We are going back, we will talk to it. So that number is going to drop dramatically. In fact, when you're putting in PUV, you're talking cents on a dollar, you're probably looking at $25 or whatever. It's going to be very low. But here's the other thing that you got to factor in. I'll do this in the closing statement, too. But you got to factor in, what is it worth to you that you're not going to have to do dredging down Trine Cove? I ran a dredging program for the town of Luckler for many years. I know what we paid to clean that out. I know we used a geotube and pumped it in. I know how much we paid. It was a lot of money. Right now, we and I have spent close to $100,000 actually excavating material out of the cover.
I'm not saying you haven't, Russ. This is not about that. Everyone appreciates any conservation or any improvements to any property. We all as landowners are responsible, and we do those things. But please don't leverage that against what I'm looking at as a taxpayer and our community. And also, I don't feel a decision needs to be made in 7 days. We had this conversation 7 days ago, and to come in here and make it a 911 emergency. I'm here to help you. I'd like to see us help you, but I want more time, and my intent is to try to help you. But I do not like this. It's a 911 emergency. It wasn't even drawn up till when? When was this resolution drawn up?
Last week.
Well,
okay.
I think we have a motion on the floor.
I would like to see it postponed for 30 days.
Let me do my closing.
Go ahead.
Let me do my closing statement. I'll do it. But I understand. I understand. I appreciate that, Bob. We have been working with the mayor and the town manager for a long time on this.
And Shannon.
So this is very long time. This is not 911.
My conversation.
I understand.
Yeah.
I just brought you in.
That's correct.
But please understand, we've been working with the town for years on this.
I understand.
So I want to know, from our perspective, it's not 911, but I respect where you're coming from. So I just want to do a closing statement. Lynn and I have found the wisdom of the decision the state and town made regarding having one set of regulations and one governing entity to manage our single parcel of farmland related to erosion control. In this case, the town and the state agreed the state would take ownership and authority of managing land disturbances and erosion control associated to our property. The basis of this decision was having one set of regulations and one enforcing agent for a single property split down the middle would minimize confusion and make enforcement easier and more efficient for both the property owner and the enforcing entity. I think we all agree to that. After multiple years of experience, by the request of the town, the challenge is associated with having two sets of regulations for land use. We now can truly appreciate and respect this prior decision by the state and the town regarding our farmland. We are now asking the town council to endorse our request to the state for de-annexation of the portion of the property that is within the town of Lake Lure so the entire parcel of farmland can be managed with one set of county regulations in one jurisdiction. We feel this request to the town is fair and reasonable. We will consider all things, including those highlighted in the whereas of our resolution, as well as our contributions to this community tied to this property, such as helping the town meet the comprehensive planning goals and objectives associated to expand and conserve land, its in comp plan, greenhouse, which protects Cane Creek Stream above Lake Lure forever, as well as reducing dredging costs for the town of Lake Lure by capturing and removing ongoing upstream sedimentation which would otherwise flow directly into town of Lake Lure. There's a cost there, there's savings. Enabling the establishment and ongoing operations of the Land Action Coalition and the Hickory Nut Growers through agriculture implementations. And also hosting a community ski and ski event that actually helped this community. And lastly, in the future, we're also talking about enabling future farmers of America with at Lake Lure Classical Academy and Lovett Jameson's farm, and also supporting the farm-to-table initiatives wherever possible. So we're talking about doing that. So with that, I'm going to go ahead and close and let you go ahead and take a motion to the table.
Can you appreciate the motion?
There's been a motion to move this subject. This issue
to the planning board for their recommendation.
And I'd like to put on top of that that we need to respond by our next town council meeting and take a vote by then.
Sure.
Yes.
I'll second.
Yeah.
For a response by the next town council meeting?
That's correct.
You're hearing that. Who will second that?
I did.
Bob seconded it. All in favor?
I think we have a comment from Shannon.
I can spot him. I can hear that.
What I asked the council to do is, you asked for a recommendation. There are a couple of things in the memo. One of the things that I recommended is that if you send this to the planning board, that you ask the planning board to address what's been asked of you. You've been asked to de-annex a piece of property. And in my memo, I said what you might want to consider is to have the planning board come up with a process for de-annexation. Because I do believe that once you start down this road, you're going to have other requests. Whether or not you choose to entertain them will be totally up to you. But in order to de-annex and to keep something from setting a precedent, you might want to consider developing some sort of formula or a standard that says basically if you meet this test, we certainly will give you the right to leave the town's jurisdiction. So that's one item. The other item is this. Is if given the opportunity, you may find that the planning board may come up with a possible solution regarding the district itself. So there are really two things, and I think what I would ask you for, because I will be the one working with the planning board on this issue, is what is it you're asking the planning board to do, and I understand it's within 30 days, but specifically what are you asking the planning board to do for you?
I'd say, as you said, come up with a process for making an application for de-annexation and a recommendation on this particular request for de-annexation, those two items.
I would like to also add something to it, because I still have the interest of having an agricultural district set up, whether it applies to this property or any other property. I'm still interested in the zoning and planning, doing something like that could help others. So
that might be clearer as a separate motion.
Okay, yeah. So the first motion is regarding it's focused on the annexation, the process, and the recommendation.
That's correct.
So it's been motioned and seconded. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed?
Yeah. Say
no. Okay, so it's 3-1. Okay. Diane, you'd like to make a separate motion?
Yes, I would like to make a motion that we ask the Zoning and Planning Board to come up with an agricultural district regulations, policy, guidance, something that would help other property owners in this area.
Yeah. With agriculture and livestock?
Yeah. Agriculture and livestock.
I would second that.
Okay, seconded by Mary Ann. Any further discussion or amendments? All in favor, say aye.
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 That's unanimous. And I think that...
We have one more. Tommy Hartzog and Kevin.
We've got one more here.
Oh.
We're not done.
I didn't mean you're done.
I meant we're done with that subject.
Can I make a statement before we end this subject?
Sure. Okay, sure. Go ahead, Diane.
Yeah, I just wanted to make one statement before ending the subject here. One reason I am concerned as I am is because this is a request for de-annexation that is so unusual. Usually people want to be annexed into a town, not de-annexed. So for us to do as much vigilant studying as we can to make sure we do the process right to de-annex the property or any future properties, we want to make sure we are benefiting the property owner as well as the town. Okay? Yes, ma'am.
Oh, I'm sorry. Bob has to say something.
Okay. Item number 11, public hearing on the proposed ordinance number 140909 concerning revisions to the town sewer ordinance. Does anybody like to speak in the public hearing? Nobody signed up? I don't see anybody. Item number 12, consider adoption of ordinance number 1499 concerning revisions to the town sewer ordinance.
Chris? Yes. So what you have is the result of large amount of work on the part of our sewer engineering consultant, Arnold Brown, and our sewer collection supervisor, Linda Ward, our customer service clerk, and myself. Over the past 5 to 6 years, we've been working with the current sewer ordinance and keeping notes of gaps, weaknesses, inconsistencies, places where we had real-life situations around questions of sewer connections, new subdivisions, and the current ordinance wasn't giving us good guidance and advice. We also had, Linda has maintained a binder of a number of policies that have been put in place by town council over the years through memos, through resolutions that are not in the ordinance. So the only way that a citizen could truly know what are the rules of sewer ordinances are to read the ordinance and to come in and go through Linda's binder of all of this. So what you have before you is basically a wholesale rewrite of Chapter 51, the sewer ordinance. It starts with what we have. It doesn't really change very much at all, but it takes and amplifies, clarifies, and takes all of those policies that were written and puts them in the ordinance. So now you have one place in 24 pages, you can read everything that's applicable to a homeowner wishing to build and connect to sewer, or a real estate developer looking to get prior approval of a number of sewer connections. What do you do about fees and taps into the sewer? What do you do if somebody doesn't pay their sewer bill? What is the town's process for that? That is all in here now. It codifies what has long been the process. The only real change is a correction of an inconsistency, where at one time we required a connection to the sewer system if you're within 200 feet of town sewer, which is basically of a manhole. Then an earlier rewrite absorbed that, but then it added a sentence that you can connect if you so choose. So it was inconsistent. Must you connect or can you connect? With water, we require a connection, and the proposed rewrite here takes us back to requiring a sewer connection if you're within 200 feet. That provision allows the town council and the town manager to make exceptions to that enforcement when necessary. We are in the process right now of doing a search and seeing if there are any and how many existing homes that are on septic and are within 200 feet of a manhole would that affect. What we'll do on the passing of this is finish that report. If we find any, then use our discretion, go through, come back to council to see, you know, if we want to require any of those at this point to connect or not. Lastly, we have added language from other municipalities that address industrial uses that could have a potential industrial impact on our sewer system. Happens all the time in other communities. We've just never had any industry of a sort that might impact our sewer collection system and our sewer treatment. Now that we're talking about the potential for craft brewing and distilling and brew pubs, that is moving into an industrial use. And what we've done is we've adopted and incorporated language from other communities which allow municipalities to handle that. Basically, you have a provision to take each applicant industry and have them describe what exactly do they intend to put into the sewer, how small, how large, how diluted is it, are there any chemicals, and based on what they indicate, the town has the authority to prescribe some level of pre-treatment or correction before it enters our system. So this really gives you a flexibility, not to just turn industrial applicants away, but the authority to craft a specific tailored solution to whatever the applicant is asking for. So that's a necessary and essential piece before you change any other part of the zoning law to be able to allow those craft breweries. That's in here along with the other things that we talked about. Any questions?
I just wanted to ask to make sure that with Harlow's input, are the rates that are in here, like under high street waste discharging and so forth, would those rates cover any kind of discharge from a microbrewery or a distillery or anything like that? Are the rates in here as far as discharge?
Yes. So those formulas, you would apply whatever the applicant industry was, okay. And those rates will produce a safe effective discharge into our system, whether it's coming from brewery or textile or light industry or what have you.
Okay, thank you.
There were a number of sentences in there that were in red, like subject to attorney's interpretation. I assume these are all minor. I didn't see anything that...
Yes, they are, and this was before the town attorney had a chance to come back. We've addressed all those. What they were spots where we needed to insert the general statute number that gives us authority to do this. Those are all inserted now. We've got that on file.
Okay.
Chris, there's one question I'd like to raise that I have had experience and know people throughout the town who have experienced where one property owner has put sewer lines across another person's property with or without their permission, and when there are breaks in the sewer line, when there are joints that disconnect and all of these things, that sewer, if the person whose property it crosses is aware of it, they have to fix it. Because if they report it, they're in big trouble. So they can let it run in the lake, or they can fix it and try to get a neighbor whose sewer it is to fix it. And there was a lawsuit long term years ago up at Thelma's store that went on and on and on. And I've had personal experience. One time I had a homeowner up above me who also owned the house below me whose sewer got blocked across from me. And when the neighbor above them, because they're seldom here, got Roto-Rooter to open it up and blow it, it blew not only into my house, but created a geyser at the property line where it was running into the lake. And the owner, who had refused to clear out the line or to help pay for it, I paid it in full, came down because he thought I had turned his water off. That's when I was on the well. I turned the water off to try to stop the sewer, but that's after the town had hooked some of the houses on the water, so it didn't stop it. But he came down to pay me for his water because he was 6 months in arrears. And he thought I guess he was in the shower. He thought I'd turned his water off. I said, no, I didn't turn you. I turned your water off because we got a problem down here. And I took him and showed him the sewer geyser. This was on a Sunday morning, and I had already put in an emergency call to the Roto-Rooter because the block was over on his property. And he said, yeah, that is a problem. And I'm telling you, his renters were swimming in it. And he didn't say a word to them. He said, I got to go to work. And he left. And I paid to clean out his line. I think we need to look at this problem. And I know there are other people in this room who have had the same experience or similar experiences.
Did we pass this ordinance and address these other these concerns in a separate way, or is it best to try to do it with this ordinance?
We can always come back and further amend or improve the ordinance.
Do we need a motion, or just go ahead and just put in the notes to address?
I'll just take that as a note.
I'm just asking that it is a concern we need to address. It doesn't necessarily have anything to do with what we're asked to do here.
No, it is. I deal with it quite often. The state has the ultimate authority here, but it impacts us here locally. It is a private issue between private landowners that jointly utilize a private portion of the system before it gets into the town system. And it's thorny, and it's tricky.
It is.
So, we could do, you know, some more discussion about potential ways that the town, you know, could help streamline that, where we would have the authority, because in some cases we might not have the statutory authority to be able to insert ourselves or regulate an area that the state is already regulating.
What the state does is step in and say it has to be fixed. If the person whose property it's on fixes it, nobody holds the people who are also responsible to share in that cost. And I've always felt like the town should do something to say, okay, you people are going to have to work this out at the very least, and to address it as a community problem. I've been given all kinds of scenarios, you know, take care of it yourself. But sometimes that just doesn't work.
Okay, let's do that if we can, and go ahead, and I'll make a motion that we adopt the resolution.
Go ahead, second.
Second.
Second by John. Any further discussion? All in favor say aye.
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 It's unanimous. And we'll consider the hybrid systems as a separate subject.
Right.
Okay, last item on here is the Kevin Cooley, Tom Hartzog sign issue.
Yes.
There's a lack of space to put up in not meeting our sign ordinances.
They have a very another unique situation, but I think it could be really easily remedied, and what we need to do at this point is just refer it to the zoning and planning board, because they make the they put those that's part of the zoning law in town, so it would be up to them to come to us with a recommendation, and we need to ask them to do that is all this is about. So I'll make a motion that we do that.
Motion made by John to refer this to the planning board. Seconded by Bob.
Yep.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Unanimous. Item number 22, adjournment.
I'll make the motion we adjourn.
Seconded. All in favor, aye.